You're listening to Comedy Central.
Welcome to episode 57 of the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
I hope you guys like talking about college football, because we don't.
Back in the studio with my friend Anthony Jeselnik, world famous comedian, specials on Netflix, show coming up on Comedy Central.
Mm-hmm. About to start soon.
I'm Greg Rosenthal. I've got a show right now on NFL Network.
You do? I saw a clip of it looked almost like kind of trippy, like you guys were like grooving out.
Yeah.
And it was it was embarrassing.
That was ended up being just a social only video. Was not
ended up like you meant it for TV. You meant it to air.
It was possibly going to be on the air, and then it ended up just being on social for the most part. The Around the NFL broadcast, which is on 6 p.m. Eastern this Friday on NFL Network, is mostly just us kind of talking about football. That was just a little side piece.
It's a big deal to get your own show on the NFL Network. You guys, they're like the HBO. You know what I mean? It's of sports. Of sports dedicated to one.
I mean, they're like the NFL league of sports, which is the most popular sport.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the Comedy Central of comedy.
How does the NFL Network do ratings-wise, like in general, like compared to ESPN?
You know, it's a lot smaller than ESPN. It's smaller than ESPN2 as well, but it crushes any other sports network.
And like
it's
MLB like, Network?
Yeah, multiple times bigger than those. And it's somewhat competitive with like ESPN2 and stuff like that. But yeah, it's not as big as
Has it been
ESPN.
Growing?
Well, we've only done it for 2 weeks.
No,
this
I mean the
TV
network.
Show.
The network.
Yeah, it's done pretty well because they have gotten more rights for games and even just showing old games, and it does fine. It does pretty well.
How are the ratings for your you've done how many episodes now?
We've done 2 and they've been solid. They built on whatever was before it, apparently.
Will you keep doing it after the Super Bowl?
No. It's just this is our third and final one for this little playoff preview section. And we're hoping, you know, they bring it back for next season.
For the entire season, not just
right.
The playoffs.
That's what I would be hoping for.
Cool. It's good to have a goal. You know what I mean? Like with Good Talk Season 2, our goal is to bring the network to its knees. You know, that afterwards they're just like backing up a truck, being like, please, please save us. Save us from ourselves. That's what we hope. But I get started next month.
I like,
I go look at Office Spaces. News. This week.
Oh, cool.
And when would you be taping? That's our producer, Erica Tamposi, also my producer at the NFL.
Mm, she wears a lot of hats. Wearing one right now.
I am wearing a hat.
I don't know exactly. I think they've told me what the kind of plan is, but I forget.
I keep thinking, I listen to the Conan O'Brien podcast, and he starts each one kind of messing around with his producer before getting to the good stuff. And he always is talking about just like how much fun he's having. Like how it's like the most rewarding professionally thing he's done in a while in terms of being creative and just like getting him to stretch
a
new muscle. Do you feel that same sort of fun and gratitude for doing this podcast?
I think that Conan only says that because he's comparing it to his own TV show.
Yeah.
But I enjoy getting to spend time with my best friend Greg and my lesser friend Erica. Who's the only reason she's not like more of a friend is because she's just way too young. I'm almost double her age, and I've got a problem with that. I don't need these May December friendships. You know what I mean? But no, I enjoy this. I enjoy this podcast.
Wow.
I'm in a great mood today. May December. That's not an insult. I mean, you're young. You should be happy to be young.
She's but, so like, dumb. It went over her head.
So
you know?
Dumb.
Like, yeah.
You're
it's not a term that people say a lot.
Stupid.
May
I said
December.
Young.
You did not say young. You said dumb.
We'll go back and listen after this and see what we can do. No, I'm in a great mood. I'm in a great mood this week. I'm very excited for this podcast. We got a lot to.
You've got your because
you're not drinking or what?
I think I've got maybe a little more energy. I mean, I haven't been drinking. I had like a little bit at dinner on Friday, but since the new year, I've been off the sauce, which has been nice. I'm only doing it. People are like, "Oh, like is it a New Year's resolution?" No. If you listen to this podcast, I talk regularly about my my TMJ, my grinding of my teeth, which has been getting worse and worse. That I found that since I got
people love that as a podcast topic.
I think they do.
The fans love it.
I think a lot of people grind their teeth, and hearing someone talk about it and what they do to fix it is helpful. Since I've like seen the specialist and I've been working on it, that I've realized that I just grind way harder when I drink. And I'm like, all right, let's just like, you know, see how. Play with it and see what I can do to stop doing this. So will I like never drink again? Of course not. But it's been very pleasant not drinking. I haven't like wanted to or not been able to, but things have been good.
You said you had a lot to get to for how, you know, what you've been doing this week. So I was
curious. Why don't you start?
I haven't heard. Wow.
Talk to me about Walker's birthday. I missed the party. I missed the birthday. I didn't even get the FaceTime. You called me to FaceTime and I slept through it.
Yeah, you scheduled the time that you thought would be good for FaceTiming. I called a little early for that, and you were not there, but it's okay because, you know, he got his present, and I sent you a nice video of them Walker opening it, and, you know, Anthony, Big Godfather Anthony, got the most baller present.
But he knew what he was getting. Like, he knows. Or is it like he asks for it? I mean, they've never asked for something that I have not delivered.
Right.
So once they ask for it, they're just like, oh yeah, here it is.
Yeah, he probably knew, but it was a long build up to get this particular, you know, Thomas and Friends, Thomas the Tank Engine nonsense that hopefully we'll be able to throw away in like a year.
The Tank is immortal. It seems like I don't think it was around when I was a kid. It came from like England, right? Like it was
yeah,
like an English
it's
thing.
Terrible. It's terrible. Its values are terrible. Everything. I was jealous. There was like another dad at the birthday party. Was like, oh yeah, my kid went through a Thomas phase when he was three, and I was jealous because Walker's been in it for 3 years. He turned five. We got a big party situation where you rent out what the equivalent of like a large gym with all these ridiculous. Play equipment and
the same
kids
thing I
just
went to
run,
last year.
Same exact yeah. thing. And it was fun. It went well. It's like, I love, he's finishing up preschool. I love checking the boxes of like, this is the last time we'll be throwing one of these types of parties.
Yeah.
Like exactly like that. But his uncle Dean has been here all week.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, he's the best.
Uncle Dean, of course, is Emeka's brother. I went last year to this party and I was like, oh, it's important for like the Godfather to like to be around for something like this. And the kids could not have cared less.
No,
they're
not interested.
They don't watch Netflix. They don't watch Comedy Central. Like I didn't get asked for a single autograph the whole party. And it was like, even if I walked through, they were like annoyed that an adult was around that I didn't feel bad about having to miss that Saturday
yeah.
night. But what was
they're
crazy
five.
Was I discovered this weekend that my 1-year-old nephew, who turned one on Sunday, has the exact same birthday as Walker, my godson. And you would think that I would have like put that together before now. I've had a year to figure it out, and it just occurred to me.
Well, now you have no excuse
to forget,
but to remember.
That's right.
Every single year. I.
What did you guys get him? What was your big present? Was it just throwing the party, or did you guys have like?
Yeah, we had a couple different things. I got him a tennis racket. I don't even remember it
like
all.
Like a kid's one, like
yeah,
like a,
like a kid's one.
One.
He loves playing tennis.
What was the gift that you were like? You were like, Anthony, get him this, and then you said no.
It was the one you ended up getting.
Oh, okay.
Because yeah, I was gonna get it for him because I wanted the credit of getting the thing that he really wanted. But then my practical side took over, and it wasn't a money thing because it really wasn't that expensive or anything.
No.
It was more just like, I don't want another big like extra thing in my house. So we've got to get him this thing. I don't know what to tell you to get him. So you might as well just get it.
So I don't want it in my house. Let's have Anthony do it. So it's his fault.
Right. Well, just so I don't have two gigantic things at my house.
You do though. Because that Hot Wheels thing that I got him for
yes.
for Christmas is
it,
insane.
It is a problem having a birthday party right after Christmas because the politics of these things are you have to invite everyone from his class to go. But in the last year of preschool, it's like 19 kids, plus some of them bring their siblings.
Oh, really?
So it's like 20 kids. You get like 20 presents, which is great if you're Walker. But it's like, what the fuck are we going to do with 20 editions of Mousetrap?
I remember
Legos.
You re-give to donate. People
yes,
love that.
I know. Mousetrap, sneaky good present.
I don't think so. You play it once and then everything's fucking broken. Like you just lose all that shit. We had that when we were kids. I remember last year when I went to the party that pizzas got there. I was starving, and the pizzas showed up. And I ate so much pizza that like the kids were like, is there any more pizza? And I was like, oh, fuck, I got to get out of here. Like, I just ate, like, I ate way too much of, was it Little Caesars? Shout out to Caesars.
It wasn't this time. I think it was Papa John's, our favorite place. You got to, you know, when you get a chance to support a company mostly known as, like, the racist, you know, pizza place.
No, they've had commercials, but they're not racist anymore. And also Chick-fil-A is all about humanity. According to the commercials. Have you seen those new Chick-fil-A commercials?
No.
They're terrible. It's just like people sitting on a couch talking about like how amazing Chick-fil-A is for the community. People have their weddings at Chick-fil-A. You're like, shut up. You guys still suck. What else, how was he just had like a great weekend? Was he just happy the whole time?
Yeah.
And
I mean,
you were like, so on Saturday, like I know on Sunday you had to go.
We had
deal
football.
With the games.
We had football on at the time, so it was very confusing and yeah, it was a lot going on.
So you had nothing, you didn't have to work at all on Saturday?
No, I mean, I had to watch the game once I got back home, and then I had to stay up late that night, like, watching and taking notes after they went to sleep to make up for the game I didn't watch. But, yeah, it was fine.
That's cool.
It was fine. The night before, it really struck me, like, that was a highlight of my weekend. Emeka and I went to, like, we didn't make any dinner plans, and this time we just kind of stumbled into, like, an empty Thai place on a Friday night, which with really good food, but we were like the only people there, and you know, it's not like a cool part of town or anything like that, and it felt good like that we had finally settled on kind of like a restaurant that reflects where our relationship is right now. Know what I mean? Yeah, just like, you know, let's not go for all the bells and whistles. Let's just sit in an empty restaurant with some good food and not try to be all fancy. You
I
know
think
what
that's
I mean?
Nice because then there's no pressure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you go out to like a really fancy dinner, you're like, we've got to make the most of this. If you just go and chill in like a Thai place, then you can just have fun and wander out whenever. That sounds fun. On Friday night, I did a lot of writing this weekend, a lot of reading, but I've got my Largo show, my monthly Largo show this Wednesday that I want to be prepared for. But on Friday night, I had a friend come over. We went out to dinner. And I had a couple drinks and then went back and they had a screener of the Mr. Rogers movie, the new one, the Welcome to the
I recommend
Beautiful
it.
Day in the Neighborhood. Yeah.
Oh, I can see where this is going.
I don't talk about things I dislike and when it comes to art, you know what I mean? So, but we watched it and and I expected to cry. I was like, this is like Mr. Rogers. If you know me, I'm from Pittsburgh. Mr. Rogers lived in Pittsburgh when he was filming the show. We would see him as kids, like walking around, and it changed your universe. When like every kid grew up watching Mr. Rogers, but seeing him on the street, it just seemed like almost like I lived in Hollywood as a kid. You know, that was like the big show. If you saw Big Bird walk past you, it would like blow your mind as a kid. So I was really into Mr. Rogers. Thought I would cry and didn't even come close.
I did at the very end.
Didn't even like
everything
it's
I've
not,
heard about
it's
it.
It's not
like,
even about him.
Right. Everything I've heard about it is halfway through. You're like, why do I care about this journalist? Oh, I don't care about this journalist. Why am I watching this movie?
And it was like in the documentary, there's like two shots of his sons, his grown sons. And it makes you want to see a documentary about them. It makes you want to hear about them the whole time. And in the movie, Mr. Rogers mentions his sons once. He says like one sentence about each that makes you want him to talk about them for the rest of the movie, like their like strained relationship and how it is like having Mr. Rogers as your dad. So I was just like, this is terrible, we've got to watch something else. And I just on a whim went to Netflix and checked out the Kevin Hart documentary.
Oh, yeah.
On Netflix. Holy shit. It must be seen to be believed. I watched, I think it's 6 episodes. I watched all of them in a row. I went to bed at like 5 in the morning because I couldn't stop watching. And it just got more and more insane. Like, you can't believe. I've talked to my friends about this who've seen it. And people say like.
Are you friends with Kevin Hart?
No.
Have you ever met him?
Never met him. Before he like became Kevin Hart, but he was still like on the, he was like still like coming up huge. We were together at the Comedy Cellar. And he was following me. He was like a drop-in guest and completely ignored me. Like, I wanted to just say hi and introduce myself. And he just saw me walk off stage. Like, he knew that I was a comedian and just stared straight ahead with like a smile on his face. And was nice to everyone else except for me. And I don't know if I had told a joke that like ticked him off or he was just like, because everyone says, all comics say he's like a cool guy, but has never been mean to me. But I don't. He's not a friend.
Why did you have to watch all 6 in a row?
Because you cannot believe, like when someone does their own documentary, you know, makes a documentary about themselves and then edits it and puts it out, you assume it's going to be like a fluff piece where you don't get any real information, or like it's going to be like rehabilitating his image after cheating on his wife and the Oscars scandal with his old tweets. And it is not. It is like an insane person not understanding like what people want to see and what they don't want to see. That he just looks like he makes himself look awful, and he knows the cameras are there.
That seems compelling, though.
Did we talk about it? Because I was like, if you're going to watch two episodes,
I didn't. It's too busy a work week with playoffs and everything, but I want to.
The episode where he, I mean, it's all insane. And he talks about his hustle a lot. They say the word hustle more than they say Kevin in the movie, and it seems insane to work for him. It seems insane to be one of his friends, and the episode where he talks about cheating on his wife is unbelievable. He literally, like, they have his wife like kind of crying, talking about how awful it was to get the video of him cheating on her, and then it cuts to Kevin Hart blaming his friend who videotaped him while he's drunk in Vegas. He's like, listen, I got too drunk in Vegas, and my boys, I didn't have enough of my friends around me to stop me from sleeping with a woman. And you're like, that's your excuse? And he, like, he's so tone deaf to his wife's feelings. Ugh. That it's like that you can't believe that someone was like edited differently. Yeah, that he put it out. And then when it gets to the Oscar thing, it's beyond. You would think that there would be some sort of apology, and just his entire crew being like his publicist, his manager's being like, Kevin, you have to go on an apology tour. And he's like, nope, I'm not doing it. And he's like the smile, like trying to explain why he's not going to, and it doesn't make any damn sense. And there's one where it's like his, not his publicist, but there's some guy who works for him. He's explaining the day that Kevin Hart did like the Instagram video where he like does a non-apology of like, I've already talked about this, like right after the tweets came out and they talked about getting rid of him. And the guy's like, I called his people to be like, put me on the phone with Kevin. We got to talk about how we're going to apologize about this. And they put him on hold. He says he's sitting there on hold, and then the Instagram video pops up that Kevin had made while he was on hold. And the guy's like, and they don't try to defend him at all. They're just like, he didn't have the decency to get out of bed. He's laying in bed, like wiping sleep out of his eyes, talking about this. They were just like, they're just throwing their hands in the air. Like, what do we do? At one point, they're like, you're messing with our livelihood. And he just doesn't care. That one of my friends said he must have some kind of psychosis. And I was like, yes, that behavior would lead me to believe he has some kind of psychosis and this insane ego. He'll be like, this is all for my kids. Like, no, it's not. It's for you. And which is fine. But then to make it a documentary and put it out is beyond. Like, I just spent the whole time just like with my mouth open. I can't believe that like his production company
did it. I love stuff like that,
it.
Though. That is yes. Fascinating. Unintentionally sometime, but just the cats in a different way was fascinating that it existed.
Mm-hmm.
That the whole process that went into coming out, and especially like documentaries or docuseries sometimes that are fascinating, like for unintentional or unexpected ways. I'm excited. Our friend, you know, we have a friend that was involved in the making of it.
Yeah.
A mutual friend. Shout out to Mike Berkowitz.
Yeah. Burke is not in the documentary. Burke, I'm sure, was like, I don't want to be in this at all.
So
his manager, a guy who I know, is in it for a second. And it's like, well, Kevin is at his worst, where he's explaining to this table of people why he's not going to apologize and why it's smart not to apologize. And then it cuts to this manager who's just like looking at his phone and just looks so miserable that I'm like, you didn't tell them to cut you out of this? You didn't tell them to not put you in it? It's unbelievable.
See, I know you never actually would lose total perspective, but you do have to admit. So when I saw Mike Berkowitz, our friend, in London as with part of this whole Kevin Hart filming crew.
Oh yeah,
when we were over there
2 years ago.
Yeah, and Erica was there too, taping our podcast there and doing our NFL thing, and we happened to be staying at the same hotel at the same time. And he had sold, and this was, I think, kind of the culmination of this documentary. At least it was a big part of it. He had sold out the O2 Arena for three straight nights,
mm-hmm.
as a comedian, which mm-hmm. is just wild. I mean, that's like a 15,000 person arena.
I've performed there. I did two shows with Chris Rock there.
Mm. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could see how people would lose their minds a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Like, it's understandable, but it's still like, he talks about all the friends, the people around him. At the end, he like buys his boys like all cars, and they're like, oh my God. But it's like, it seems like an awful life to be around him. But if you do get a chance, it's called Kevin Hart, Don't Fuck Up or Don't Fuck This Up. Definitely watch it. It has to be seen to be believed. The last thing I'll talk about of the week, I've had a bet, a almost year-long bet with my manager. Almost a year ago, the movie Us came out in theaters. Jordan Peele's Us, if you guys saw it, the horror movie about clones and stuff. And I saw it thought it was great. It's kind of not a sequel to Get Out, but it's his follow-up film to Get Out. And I was talking to my manager about it, and she says, Lupita Nyong'o, is that how you say her name?
Yep.
She's like, she's getting an Oscar nomination. And I say, no, she's not. Like, only because she's a great, it's a great performance, I'll give you that. But the horror genre is so disrespected by award shows.
This.
Yeah, that like she's, there's no way. Like if Hereditary last year, Toni Collette gave the performance of the year in that movie and she didn't come close to a nomination, that like if she's not getting it, no one's getting it. And my manager says $100. And I'm like, okay, $100. And then a couple weeks later, we're at dinner with Comedy Central. We're talking about season one of Good Talk with Comedy Central. And she sits down and she's I've never seen her more cocky than me, my manager, Christy. And she's like, make it $1,000. Make it $1,000. She's getting it.
Shit.
And I go, done. $1,000. And through award season, where it's kind of like seesawing. It's like back and forth. Like it's kind of a coin flip. And then Monday morning, the Oscar nominations come out and she's like, I owe you $1,000. And I'm like, give it to charity. And so she's like, which charity? And I look up Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has had these earthquakes. They're still dealing with the last natural disaster they had. And everyone right now is giving to Australia. And I understand why, but it's like the sexy thing to do. It's like people selling nudes to like raise money for Australia, like Jeff Bezos giving like $500,000 to Australia. No one's talking about Puerto Rico. That I was like, I went up and looked up the best place to do it or the different places to do it. And I said, give $1,000 to direct relief. And we'll be done. And she like sends me the receipt. She's like, I did it. And I started to feel guilty where I was like, if I had lost, I would have given $1,000. I've been happy to. I'm not going to give money because I won the bet, that I matched it. So if you're listening and you've got some spare change, give it to Puerto Rico. Look up, and Direct Relief is a great charity, but I picked it from a list of five different ones. So look it up, and if you want to give to Direct Relief, because Lupita Nyong'o didn't get an Oscar nomination, I think that's the thing to do. Help out Puerto Rico. They're Americans.
So you're really down on the whole Australia thing.
No,
it's sexy.
I've got some friends in Australia that I got in touch with and asked if they were okay. Everyone I know is good. And they're like, it's an environmental disaster, but Puerto Rico's been a disaster for years now. I think it's fascinating when a cause gets swept away by something else. You know, like people don't talk about, no one's giving money to Flint anymore, you know, and they should be. It hasn't gotten better. But just other disasters come up.
I mean, there's an endless list of.
Of course,
of
I'm
problems.
Just using an example, but I was happy that I did that and hooked it up, and now it's time for, did we get any notes? That's from the Comedy Central catalog?
Yeah.
Wow. That is surprising. Did we get any notes? No, but I want to say thank you to Jeremy for fixing all the stuff that I wanted fixed. You know, so the guy, we came in here and there was a guy waiting in here and he's like, I fixed everything. Is there any problems? Let us know. And I was like, oh, I do. I talk about it every week. And now it's time for another charity that I'd like to give to. Let's take it down to Erica's Corner. Confusing, you know, it's all kings versus queens. The emotion, a rocky coaster, or so it seems. Okay.
Whoa.
That sounds like an outtake from like people
spoken
who.
Spoken word.
People trying to make fun of Outkast.
I like the reactions Erica gives, which make it clear that she hasn't listened to it beforehand.
Yes.
No, I have to cut them up.
Erica Tamposi is our producer. She has been the entire time, minus one episode.
Shout out to Coach T.
Yeah.
What an ep.
And we missed her that week. We love her. She's spunky. She's young. She's got a great life ahead of her. But for now, she's stuck in Erica's corner. We like to give Erica a chance to kind of prove herself, you know, kind of like show what she's got by asking us a question or sometimes a quiz, sometimes some bonkers thing she comes up with. But what do you got for us today, Erica?
Just a fan email. We haven't done one since last week. So here's the next one.
Cool. And what's the email address again if people want to write a question?
It is jrvpjuniorvicepresident@gmail.com.
All one long word. While we're here, like rate us and review us on iTunes. It's been a long time since we asked. But I did notice when I went to look at our reviews the last time I asked, just like 100 people.
Well, maybe
I'll pick
I'll pick some good ones and read them next, Erica's Corner, if we have some good reviews that are worth mentioning.
That's good. In our reviews, the people are, I enjoy all of them because people get creative. You know, like if I tweet something, people try to make jokes underneath it, and I never like it that much. Occasionally, somebody does something that kind of raises my eyebrows and impresses me. But in the I love reading the reviews. So if you want to get to me, write a review on iTunes. So Erica, what's who wrote the question, and what is it?
David S. asks. Anyways, they did like a hello, got rid of that. What's the spiciest thing you guys have ever eaten? As boys going to school in Louisiana, I could only assume you've been punched in the face by spice at least once. Or, if you haven't eaten anything spicy that you feel is story worthy, what's the worst thing you've ever eaten? P.S. My dream is to see Anthony and Greg together on Hot Ones. I would assume Anthony would do it solo because, you know, he's famous. What would be the odds of a Hot Ones promotion ever happening?
We'll take this. This is like three questions. We'll take them one by one. Greg, do you remember the spiciest thing you've ever eaten? Because New Orleans like gave me more of an appreciation for spice. Like I never put hot sauce on things until I got to New Orleans, and I really enjoyed it. Like I loved spicy gumbo. I loved like it made me really fall in love
the
with
spiciest.
With spice.
Yeah. I mean,
why are you saying?
Weren't we
that?
Forced to eat? Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we were in a fraternity, which you know continues to be. An embarrassment, but also a source of material on the show.
I don't think it's embarrassing because we joined it, but then we quickly pulled away.
Right,
it wasn't
but I
like
think
we
there was
like
some crab oil involved on some disgusting stuff. We had
never
to eat.
Eat it. I thought it was like they would make us drink hot sauce sometimes.
Yeah,
but I don't think I ever did it. I kind of skated through hazing, but yeah, I wouldn't. That's not the spiciest meal you've ever had. That's what
crab
you're
oil.
Say?
I have no idea.
I once, not even in New Orleans. And I like to, like if I eat sushi, I like that bite where like I have too much wasabi and it like my eyes start watering. I like that. I went to a Thai restaurant called Jitlada in Los Angeles with Kumail Nanjiani and his wife, Emily, and a bunch of other comedians. And like it was a place they would go to all the time. And I joined them one time and they order for us. They order for the table and just like a bunch of different stuff. And we get the soup. And right before they bring the soup, they bring out this giant thing and they put it in the middle of the table, this giant bowl that is full of like sliced cucumber and carrots and then just crushed ice, like huge amounts of crushed ice. I'm like, why is that there? And like, oh, the soup is spicy. And I'm like, oh, the soup is spicy? Like, I'm from New Orleans. Like, I'm gonna eat this. And within seconds, I am taking handfuls of this ice and stuffing it in my mouth, like trying to cram it in my ears to make the pain go away. Like, it was brutal and I loved it. That was my spiciest meal. If you don't know a spicy meal, do you have a worst meal?
I mean, I my spiciest thing would be some of those soups in K-Town, or sometimes it's Indian food, and you always have to adjust for how much they're adjusting for white people, because different ones adjust differently. Some don't at all, and so their mild is going to be spicy as hell. Their medium is going to be insane, and their spicy is going to be like next level. But some, if they expect white people to be there a lot, will like, you know, push everything down a level. And so that's always a very tricky time if it's the first
time
you've ever
gone
there. It's
not just white people. I think it's Americans, not just like white people. Like, I think anyone in America who's
well, they're all Americans that are there. You know, it's just they're all Asian Americans. You know, they're all Korean Americans or whoever. It's the white people. I mean, that's in some do adjust and some don't. And so you got to go. You got to try it once. And usually you try like low to be safe. It's probably one of those where you're just like sweating like crazy by the end of the meal, even if you're oriented. The worst thing, I mean, is stuff that makes you sick. So I would have to say it was some terrible jambalaya I had at like a B-minus level like brewery in New Orleans once when I was there for covering an NFL game, and I was just trying to get a meal. You quickly and immediately got sick right afterwards. I had to cover a game that day, the Saints game.
I don't think I've ever gotten food poisoning, but I do use it as an excuse once a month. but the worst meal I ever had, I was in New York with my dad and my brother, and we went to Chinatown. And my dad was like, I'd really like to go to Chinatown and get some like authentic Chinese food. And I'm like, oh, we can just walk into any place and it'll be amazing. And we walked into a dim sum place where we were the only non off the boat Chinese people there. No one who worked at the restaurant spoke English. And they just bring carts around and they ask if you want something. You don't know what they're saying. And the first thing they bring, we were like, okay, we'll try it. And it was the most delicious like dumpling I've ever had in my life. We each got one. And we were like, I could eat 100 of these. And like, we've got to just start saying yes to everything. And the next 8 things they brought were like, I'm going to guess brains of like different animals, because it was like so horrible. And we're trying to like fit in and be cool. But we walked out of there like an hour later, just like disgusted. Like, we are still hungry, but you don't even want to think about food because it was so bad. And it was like, it was art. Like, we just didn't know what we were saying yes to. And people around us were enjoying the hell out of it. But that is, we talk about that meal, I think, once a year.
Would you guys ever do like a one chip challenge? You know, that thing that's going viral. It's like they send you a chip. It's like supposed to be the hottest chip. It's like probably, you know, as big as a hand, and you're supposed to, it's like a Carolina Reaper chip. And you have to eat the chip.
Like a potato chip?
It seems stupid, though, stuff that's for the sake of it. Like, I would eat anything if it was at a restaurant and it was supposed to be good. And okay, this chip is supposed to, like, blow your mind. But when you're doing it as, like, some sort of performative
I don't do
contest,
the challenges.
That's stupid.
Like, I've got talent. Like, I don't need to embarrass myself on camera to get... I'm not one of the jackass crew.
Try the world's hottest chip made with the hottest chili pepper on the planet.
You're getting way out of the question. I mean, I guess this is your...
Well, I was just going to say, if I brought in the chips, would you guys do the one chip challenge?
No. See, that brings us to Hot Ones, the last question. Then honestly, they've asked me twice, like when it first started.
Okay, so for most people who don't know what is it?
It's like it's an interview thing online, where, and it's wildly popular.
It's really cool.
Where they have like, it's like, 10 questions or something, and there's 10 wings in front of you. And progressively hotter sauces, and the host eats one with you, but they ask you a question, you eat a wing while you answer, and by the end, like, people are dying. And like, they've had chefs come on, like Gordon Ramsay type people, who come on and they've got like their bottle of milk, these like different tricks they have to like keep the pain away, and they do not work. Like, people always fall apart, and I've always said no, because I'm like, I don't want to be like sweating, like snot running down my nose, like mouth just like gushing like saliva while I'm trying to answer questions and be on camera. It doesn't appeal to me. But if Greg did it with me, I would do it.
You hear that, Hot Ones?
I mean, I would
do
it.
They do now that you screamed it into the microphone. They certainly heard you.
I would do it.
So yeah, that is...
Do you think they'd take us as a duo? I mean, I don't know.
The fact that they've asked me twice, I think they were just like, Anthony, we'll never do this. We'll stop asking. But I think if we were like, we're promoting maybe season 3 of the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
You heard that?
JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
Maybe no, I won't not. Maybe I won't do it now that Greg just doesn't even know how the show works anymore. But yeah, we'll see. But that is the answer to David S.'s question. Again, that's JRVP, Junior Vice President, at gmail.com. Erica will read your letters. And if they're good, like if they're like interesting and good, then we will read it on the air and answer your question.
It's educational, what we went through today. I mean, don't go to Chinatown without an Asian person with you, you know.
Or just like, or have a or place any, that's recommended. You know what I mean? Don't just walk into a place because it's like packed. Like, this place was so packed, but it was a disaster, and it was our fault, not theirs. The food, the delicious food was delicious, but the bad stuff was rough. And that was Erica's Corner. Shine on, you crazy diamond.
Oh yeah.
Well, I was like,
God. People like yelling on the mic today.
It is cranked up.
And now it's time for...
Ad copy.
Greg, hit it.
All right. I'm excited to talk about Away. They're back. Our old friends who make some of the most thoughtful, modern products, suitcases in the entire world. We have them now. Erica and I and Anthony all have them now.
I love it.
I've used it. It's been great. It's thoughtfully designed, as I said, very durable. It's very organized. It's very easy to carry up and down the stairs because it's so lightweight.
It looks good.
It has minimal design, and so you see it, you know it's yours. You also have a laundry bag for dirty clothes, a built-in lock that the TSA will not question. This way, the suitcase is constructed in a way that really solves a lot of headaches when you're traveling. One of the things I like, it's got a lifetime guarantee. Away products are designed to last a lifetime, but if any part of your suitcase breaks, Away's standout customer service team will arrange to have it fixed or replaced. There's a 100-day trial on everything that Away makes. You take it out with you. You call customer service. Anything you want. Also offers free shipping and returns on any order within the United States, Europe, Canada, and Australia.
And you know what? I'll flat out say it right now. If you want a Tumi bag but don't want to pay Tumi prices, get yourself an Away case. You know, Away is too classy an organization to make that claim. They don't want to trash another business. I'm happy to. I'm happy to tell you that this is the best bang for your buck, and it looks awesome.
It has a unique travel style. It's got a range of suitcases made of different materials, variety, colors, two different carry-on sizes. So for whatever you're looking for, Away has you covered, and it will last you a lifetime.
We've got the big suitcase ones, in case you're wondering.
Yeah, we do get the big ones. To get your suitcase and other travel essentials, you can go to awaytravel.com/vanity. Again, that's awaytravel.com/vanity.
And that was
ad copy.
Great job, Greg. Let's get to headlines.
Sometimes you got to be a little vague. You know you want to.
That sounds like a commercial for child molestation.
Speaking of people that struggle to take care of their children, I am excited for really a deep dive this week into our old friend Antonio Brown. It's been a while since we talked about any players or anything to do with the NFL, Anthony.
This is for Jordy.
Yeah, more NFL stories. And there's really a lot to work with Antonio Brown. But I want to start with the story of him calling the police to his house. And the police came and they responded to a dispute that he was having with the mother of his children. He was upset, saying that she was trying to take one of his cars as she picked up her children.
Wait, she was picking them up or she was dropping them off and then tried to leave in one of his cars?
She was trying to bring them. She was picking them up, I believe, to bring them to school. And in his words, she was trying to take one of his cars. Why don't we listen to a little bit of what Antonio Brown had to say?
This is real life. White people trying to get over. Bases. And the police not helping. Trying to finesse a Bentley. Bitch, you don't drive Bentleys. This is not your life.
Is his the mother of his children white?
Yeah.
It's the bag of dicks.
Okay, at this point he takes out a bag of gummies shaped
bag
like penises. For some reason.
Like gummy worms, only they're shaped like penises.
Hey, Charles, here go the bag of dicks.
It's unopened. It seems like he had this. He, like, bought this for the situation.
Fish, here go the bag
and then
of
saved
dicks,
it.
Fish.
And he's talking to the cops or he's talking to the girl?
He's yelling at his girl, who he's calling a baser and a fish for some reason. I don't know what that means. The craziest thing about this is after 2 minutes.
And in the video, like, it's cops, like, with talking to the wife or the girl, the ex-girlfriend, and they're just looking at him in disbelief. And they, like, cannot believe this is even happening. And they're not, like, charging. They're not, like, going to arrest him. But they're just like, we're trying to de-escalate this, and what are you doing?
He called them.
Yeah.
And he's the one putting it on his phone. The entire video is him looking, Antonio Brown taking a video of the cop as he yells at the cop of not fixing his situation.
Yeah, screaming at the cops, and then he went on Twitter, and like his friends are all around him, and he's on Instagram Live. It's not like he put a video on his phone and someone leaked it. It's like he's on Instagram Live, like the people got to see me doing this. This will get me back in the NFL.
Like, do you think like he had the bag of gummy dicks? And then he just brought it out for this occasion, or he bought them specially to throw at his ex-girlfriend?
Great question, Greg. I think he saw them in the store and was like, I've got an idea. And then he bought them, and then he kept them like in the bowl next to his car keys, like by the door. That if he ever had to stand in his front porch and chuck them at the police and the mother of his children, he was ready for it. And he was kind of excited for the opportunity, and that's why he went on Instagram Live. He's like, I've had these sitting here for the better part of 9 months, and I'm going to get the most out of it. Like, people are going to laugh so hard at this bag of dicks thing.
Well, what does it even mean to be a fish-looking bee? I can't even say that.
I have no idea. I have no idea. A baser, I can imagine.
Baser, I could figure out. Yeah.
But I do not know. It's like it's kind of like Marshawn Lynch kept talking about take care of your chickens during his post game press conference, and I was like, I have no idea what he's talking about there. No idea what
I found out. I didn't know either, but it just meant money. Chickens is your money.
Oh, I assumed he meant children. Like I was watching it on like
I thought it meant women, maybe.
A closed captioning, and I was like, they don't know that he's saying children. But no, it was chickens. yeah, it was so crazy. And what's even crazier is that he ran like a 7-on-7 league that was sponsored by the police, like in this Florida town.
Antonio Brown.
And then he tried to go there afterwards, and they were waiting for him. They're like, here's your check back. We don't want it. And if you come back to this park again, you're going to get arrested for trespassing. Like, they were furious. And what's even crazier is that no one was talking about this. Like, TMZ picked it up, but it wasn't on ESPN until today. That, like, he's gone so crazy that him doing crazy things like this and putting it on Instagram isn't a story anymore.
Right, because he has no chance of getting back in the NFL. He worked out for the Saints as recently as, I think, December or November, but they didn't sign him, and he immediately just started taking shots at the Saints, at the Patriots, at anyone who showed any interest in him this year, saying that they're all cursed and that's why they lost early in the playoffs, and just like that they're all out to get him. And it's crazy because
even on his way to the tryout, he takes a picture of like the like when he walks in, and they're like, "Don't do that! Like you shouldn't have done this." I think he's done, but I think it's gone so far. Like he's so beyond the pale now that it's cool again to wear my Antonio Brown jersey. I've got three of them that I was like, I've got to get rid of these. I never did it. And now I'm like, I'm kind of glad I have it, that it's a kind of like a piece of history.
Yeah.
That like it's kind of cool to wear your Antonio Brown jersey.
Well, it would be more like, it would be funnier if there was not kids in the video, you know, and that he's clearly mentally unstable.
Well, he's screaming at them that in the Twitter, his live video. I can play a clip of it if you guys want. But the kids are running around and
the kids are present right there during this whole thing where he's yelling at the mom. He doesn't have anyone around him who appears to be telling him to stop doing this, because for people that aren't into the NFL, he's probably the best wide receiver the last 20 years. I think he would. There are people that would argue that, but either way, he'd be in the top.
I wouldn't argue against
top
you.
Three. One of the best players I've ever seen play football, and he's done now. I mean, there's no way he's going to play ever again just because.
What if he got some help? What if he actually got help and like went on medication and went on Oprah or whatever the hell it is now and was calm and talked about what he was wrong with him and that he fixed it? Like, remember when Terrell Owens went crazy one time and they thought he was going to kill himself, and he was like, I had a reaction to medication. And he ended up playing in the league again, but because he was kind of normal most of the time. He wasn't doing stuff like that.
It would take a long PR campaign and you know, trying to prove it to people. But can you see that as any possibility?
No.
I mean, he's been doubling down on this.
Yeah. I think I think this is one of the worst things I've ever seen. And then it gets even worse. Greg, tell us what else he did.
He is planning a new rap album this year.
What's it called?
No White Women 2020.
And the mother of his children is?
She's white.
And the women dancing in the video are?
White. He needs 20 of them.
Yes.
Good-looking ones.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
No More White Women 2020 on Cab Records, coming out in 2020. I guess he's busy. I mean, he's multi-talented. He's not just playing football.
Do we have a clip of...
He's a rapper.
We got a couple.
What's the name of the song?
This one's called Home from the N.O., New Orleans.
Oof. Yeah, that's not great. Is that the single? Is that like what he's leading with?
That was the first one, and then he released a second one yesterday called A Whole Lot of Money.
This was yesterday?
I think so, yeah.
Hit it. I don't believe that it was yesterday. At least he's breaking new ground in the rap game. You know what I mean? By talking about this.
Oh, whole lot of money. 1 week ago.
That song's called Whole Lot of Money? I believe it. That's even more embarrassing than throwing a bag of gummy dicks at the mother of your children in front of your children and the police. he's completely lost his mind. But, you know, do you think there's a future for him in the rap game?
I think you're being hard on him. I think some people are just blessed that, you know, they're not just great athletes, that they're great entertainers.
The reaction to this has been there's not a single person who's like, cool, like, I'm gonna listen to this when I work out.
Maybe they didn't hear this one. I just got home from the inno. Sean Payton talking about the good old black team rocking Johnny Bravo. 940 loaded with the motto. I just got home from the inno. Sean Payton talking about the dildo. This would be like a Sean Payton talking about a dildo. What
deal though? I think.
I would get that. So I would like download that song just so like when I visit New Orleans and I come back, I can like have something blasted when the plane lands.
Mm.
You know, just to be like, I'm back from New Orleans. I'm back from the NO. I'm gonna start saying back from the NO whenever I come back from New Orleans.
Do you have his first single that was released? Sipping on that Hennessy. I know you're missing me.
That's the full title.
That's the first line of the song, and it's a beautiful thing. I know you're missing me. Baby girl, give me some distance and forget everything that you mentioned. Decisions that you made fuck us up. Maybe I'm a player, I'm a proto. Having one girl, that's a no. So
that's Antonio Brown. I think we're going to be hearing some more about him soon. I hope he gets help, and I hope that the guy's got kids and you know, the mother of his children. That I just hope that the Bentley's okay. I got diamonds on me, did the dash with my homie. They be spazzing on me, past the chrome to the homie. I be sliding lonely, can't get caught slipping on me, homie. Had to make it home, can't get left by my lady. Got a whole lot of money. My favorite thing about the whole Antonio Brown album rollout, I guess, as it were, is there's one Instagram where he's just like holding an electric guitar and there's some musicians with him like making samples. And the caption just says, "We do it from scratch." And everyone underneath the video is just like, "Yeah, you're holding the guitar wrong. Like, and just because you're holding a guitar." That doesn't make you a musician.
No, he looks psycho. He's just sort of like dancing around with the guitar.
But then why does he have the guitar?
I mean, maybe he's like, he probably got it from Renner. What's your next headline, Greg?
We're moving on. Let's talk about the conservative group, 1 Million Moms, who is really upset this week. The moms were mad at Burger King for an advertisement that was promoting the Impossible Burger and in the fake Impossible restaurant by getting a bunch of customers who were responding to these Impossible Burgers, which are, you know, these like vegan fake burgers. And one of the customers said, "Damn, that's good." And they were really upset in their minds, the 1 Million Moms, that the word "damn" was used in an ad.
Yeah, they slammed Burger King for using the D word, they called it. 1 Million Moms, I'm sure you've heard of them before. They've been around for decades, it seems. And they seem like the worst human beings on earth. I refuse to believe there are a million of them. They get mad at anything.
There's facts to that. They are under 100,000.
Yeah, okay, thank you. They are the worst people in the world, and they get mad about anything. If two women kiss on TV or in a movie, they have something to say about it, and they just seem like they seem awful. And you like picture them, you picture just a bunch of like fat, angry moms whose husbands have left them, and the fact that they call themselves moms, even like they're just like bigoted and hateful. And this is the most petty thing I've ever heard them raising a ruckus about. Like, did they get mad at Papa John for his racist comments? No. They get mad at, like, what if our kids watched the Burger King commercial and heard someone say, "Damn, that's a good burger." Because those dumb bitches over in 1 Million Moms can't cook food. So all their kids are looking for swear words that they can use to describe that bullshit cooking. They wish they could eat a bag of dicks instead of eating what their million moms are cooking them. I despise the million moms. I don't even have, like, jokes.
They don't even know what, what the D word is. I mean, is damn the D word? Isn't the D word...
I had to look it up. When I saw the headline, I had to look up. Like, I had to read the article to be like, what is the D word?
I thought it was dick, probably.
Me too.
It's a better... I support changing the D word to dick. if it's not already.
And maybe you can get the 1 million moms on it. They have I don't think they've ever been successful in anything that they've done.
Well, they lobbied the Hallmark Channel to remove a lesbian couple at the altar. An ad that was featuring a lesbian couple on their wedding day. And Hallmark did remove the ad under the pressure, and then they eventually apologized for doing so.
Yeah, it's a knee-jerk reaction. And again, people talk about cancel culture. I'm not going to complain about that. 1 million moms has been along well before cancel culture became even like a slogan that I despise these women, and I want them to know. I've never seen one of you. You guys hide behind this number that you think is a big number. It's not, and you're even smaller than that number. And you're all, every one of them has to be ugly and out of shape. I bet they all have knee problems. I bet all 100,000 of the 1 million moms have knee problems. And one of their eyes is like foggy, you know, all of them. If you were going to sketch them all and like, if you like took all the million moms.
Are we doing mom jokes now?
That's not even a mom. This is like what these women look like.
You remind me of the Far Side right now. It's like your mama got a glass eye with a fish in it. You know what I'm saying?
You sound like Antonio Brown right now. I mean, I know the song you're talking about. It's a classic.
I should have changed my tone.
Yeah. And we're probably going to hit with a copyright by 1 million moms for using that. I just got home from the inno. Sean Payton talking about the dildo. Black T walking Johnny Bravo. 940 loaded with them hollow. Wow, you're breaking the 8-second rule, Erica.
Yeah,
and that song's going to be in my head forever now. Here's the story of the week for me.
The headline. I mean, the headline alone might be the best headline we've had on this show.
Yeah, I sent it to you guys. I texted you guys and was like, look at this.
Man high on meth fights off 15 police officers while masturbating.
Yes.
That's it.
They had to put it in the headline. He was masturbating so much. They had to put it in the headline. It wasn't like he touched himself while he was fighting off 15 officers. He must have been masturbating. Like, I think his main concern was the masturbation. And the cops were like, hey, man, you're going to hurt yourself. And he refused to stop. So he's fighting off 15 cops with one hand and 2 feet while pleasuring himself. And I mean, you know, cops get a bad rap, but they do things that no one would want to do. I mean, 15 of them, and he fought them off?
Doesn't it sound like this is the next Matrix? I mean, like a guy on meth, like fighting off 15 cops at once while masturbating. That takes some next level stuff.
Have you ever seen The Matrix? Yeah. No one touches themselves in The Matrix. But I wish there was video. Not like they can blur out what they need to blur out, but I want to know what his fighting style was. You know what I mean? What was it like masturbation foo? I'm going to go ahead and call it. What was he doing?
It's the workshop.
15 cops. That was an ad lib. The 15 cops couldn't take this guy down. Because it says he fought him off.
Yeah, well, he was at a local shopping center.
Of course he was.
And then he went to a bar, and that's where the bar, they had to call him in, and the cops came in. There's some great. First of all, I want that meth. You know, like, what meth is this?
What would you do with that meth?
I would take it. It gives you superhuman powers, apparently. The report.
And then what would you do with the powers? Like, what would you do with your powers? Like, you can do anything while you masturbate.
I would masturbate and fight off cops.
It'd give Greg an extra hour out of the day. Because he wouldn't have to take all his attention and put it on masturbation, and he could do like he multitask. With that meth, then yeah, you'd be...
If you could use that for good, the type of strength that you could simultaneously, like, still have the ability to masturbate while fighting off 15 cops, like, think of how quickly you could clean the house.
My theory is that he beat up one cop and then started masturbating as like a celebration, and the other cops came in and he just, like, couldn't stop. He couldn't stop while he fought off the rest of them. Like, it was almost like a taunting move. Like a teabag kind of thing.
All right, so my favorite detail.
You know how like, you get in a fight and then you just want to rub one out right afterwards? I think that's what happened, and then more cops came in.
Right, the fighting the cops, that is helping to keep it going.
I would just
what more of a turn? Like, there's no bigger turnout than fighting cops.
It's the sexiest thing you can do. I just think that I just would love to hear the cops like having a beer afterwards, being like, "Today was a rough one."
I don't know. I feel like you would be embarrassed. At least if you were like the fifth cop there, you should be embarrassed that they kept having to call in more people.
It's so funny to me that people get shot in their backyard and then people, they'll let 15 cops fight a guy who's fighting them while masturbating. This guy, I imagine, was white, who's a Caucasian man?
Yeah, he was a 37-year-old man, Andrew Frey. And
where was this?
It was in Oregon, where all the good shit happens. My favorite detail, the
Florida of the North.
Of the whole thing is a deputy officer attempted to arrest him initially when he went to the bathroom in this bar and even used a taser on him multiple times, but it had no effect on him. That's what I'm talking about with this meth. What is in this thing?
Meth. Like, I think there's only the one kind of meth. I don't think there's like super meth. He must have smoked a lot of it, but that is terrifying.
They're just putting the taser has no effect. I don't know.
I've seen people in movies like get tased and just like rip it out of their chest and keep coming. You know what I mean?
Have you ever seen them do it while masturbating?
Mm-hmm. This one movie I saw, it was called The Masturbator. It was kind of like one of those Jason Statham movies.
I think that's all I got on the old meth man.
There's no other details? Like they got him. He got arrested, right?
Yeah, he got in a fight and they tried to radio for help. It didn't work at first and they radioed. And that's why I think 15 showed up because a dispatcher, they tried to call people in and there was some sort of confusion and it wasn't working. And then they just were like, come, like whoever's around, just show up and try to stop this man.
That would be, imagine being in that bar when that was going on.
Another detail is that they brought him to jail and you know he passed out or something. And when he came to, he said he didn't remember any of it.
I mean, I kind of believe that. I wonder if so. That means he probably got up and masturbated again. You know, because he didn't remember masturbating before. What did they charge him with? Do you know?
I do not.
I think if someone's on meth and they're breaking the law, you should be allowed to shoot them. I'm not
public indecency, resisting arrest, and theft of services.
Not assault?
Maybe they just had to give him some credit. Like if you're that good at fighting.
It doesn't sound like he was fighting them then. They would have charged him. It sounds like he was just like holding up his hand, like give me a minute. You know what I mean? While he was masturbating and nobody wanted to come near him. I imagine 15 cops in a circle around him. Holding hands,
or they just couldn't like stop him. Like it's just like a bunch of guys awkwardly around him, being like, "No, you do it. No, you do it." You know.
I see it like they like pull his hand off, and then he just uses the other hand, and they grab that hand, and he just took the other one right back. You know, that's what I would imagine. You've got a son. He must be. He's at that age now. He's five. You know, he must be playing with himself all the time.
I mean, he certainly likes touching his penis. It's not really the same as as masturbating.
Everybody, it's a thing. Who do you think is crazier, this guy or Antonio Brown?
Antonio Brown. I mean, this guy's just got, I don't know.
Antonio Brown sounds like his body naturally produces meth. Like he sweats meth and he's never done meth in his life. But masturbating meth man, cheers to you. And now it's time for
ad copy.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Daily Show Podcast Universe, a new podcast miniseries from Comedy Central. America faces a lot of problems in today's times. The biggest, not enough podcasts. Listen to the Daily Show Podcast Universe to enjoy a series of parody podcasts featuring the Daily Show's Trevor Noah and his award-winning crew. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to enter the podcast universe today. This podcast has been brought to you. Oh, shit. I just read the thing again. I sometimes get ads and I don't read them through before I have to do them. They make fun of podcasts like The Slow Burn and This American Life. I've never heard of them. But subscribe today on Apple Podcasts and enter the podcast universe. It's called The Daily Show Podcast Universe. They're going to read an ad for us. That's why we're doing this.
Really. Ad copy.
Really sold it. You got to start listening to podcasts. You know, you've never heard of This American Life?
I've heard of it. I thought it was like a radio show, not a podcast. But I guess
That's
everything's
true.
Both now.
That's true. Slow Burn's pretty good. I've listened to the... Monica Lewinsky scandal season.
A season?
It's sort of like a almost like a podcast docu-series where they'll have like 7 episodes on like one topic. So it's like a it was like a Lewinsky deep dive.
Well, maybe they'll read an ad for us.
Our final story was a really big surprise to me that you chose this one because it seems so tame to me. So
I'll tell you what's great about it.
Okay, a Scottish TV reporter this week was tricked into donning full body armor while she did a TV segment talking about what she thought was one of Australia's deadliest creatures called the drop bear, which is a type of koala bear.
That's carnivorous.
Right. That goes after people, that if you scare them, they'll just like eat your face off.
And it's got venom in its fangs. Like, there were like a little bit of like venom in its fangs. They make her suit up in like tactical gear as if it's like a attack dog is going to come at her. When they bring the koala up to her, I've seen the video, they like kind of like they're holding it and they're like, yes, restrained, but they have the hand in between the mouth and their own face.
Yes.
And then they hand it to her and she's terrified. She's like shaking. And after like a couple of minutes, she realizes that they're fucking with her.
Well, she realizes it. She only realizes it after she gets so afraid because someone, first of all, she looks at it and it looks at her after she talks for a minute. And one of the guys off camera just goes like, oh, we might have to take him. And she goes, oh, I've heard that like if you make the koala bear scared, then they can feel that in your eyes. And she starts freaking out and gives it back to them. And it is at that moment when they see them starting to giggle that she realizes that it's just a bunch of Australians fucking with her.
And she says on the air, like this is a professional woman who does her job, and she says on the air, fucking Aussies. This woman from Scotland came there to do a story and screams fucking Aussies while they're laughing at her. Here's why I love the story. Not just for the fucking Aussies thing, because that's a little bit of Scotland in her that I always, the Scottish people are amazing. But listen, Australia is burning to the ground. It is burning to the ground, and these guys are like, let's fuck with this reporter. Like, it's all you hear about Australia is the worst stuff, and they need everything, and all their species are being wiped away, and these guys still have time. This sums up Australia so well, that while the world is burning, it's fucking Mad Max over there, and they are pulling pranks on Scottish TV reporters. I think that's the most Australian thing I've ever heard, and I love it. And it just it makes you feel like, you know what, everyone's going to be okay.
And it's apparently like it's not like a new prank. Like they do it to foreigners all the time. The drop bear is one of the Australian, most popular bits.
I mean, they have the gear. Like it looks real. And when you go to Australia, there are things that there's a lizard in Australia. I forget the name. But if it's walking, like if it's walking towards you, it will not turn. It'll just like it'll walk like over you and it'll just climb up you and over your head and then go down the other side. And wherever its paws or wherever it's like its hands and feet touch you, it opens a wound that can never close again.
Are you sure that you weren't duped by some Aussies?
I read a story about it. It was like
so
they were talking
about.
Just
gotta get out of the way.
Yes, and if you like, so you like have to make sure because you're like, oh, this thing's coming up to me. It's not gonna bite you, but wherever it touches you, open wound in the shape of its like claws forever.
Because this
they're a terrifying animals
forever?
In Australia. The wound will not close.
So you just bleed out and die.
No, like you can like patch it up, but it's like you've got to take care of it for the rest of your life. Like you've got these like open scars forever.
They told her, and I guess they always say, is the third leading cause of death for foreigners in Australia.
I believe it.
The drop bear.
I love it. I love it. Thank you, Australia. Best of luck to you. And now let's take it down to
choo-choo.
Recommendation station. Greg, what you got this week?
I'm going to recommend The Farewell.
The movie?
The movie by Lulu Wang, starring Awkwafina, which she won the Golden Globe for Best Actress for. But I was planning to do it before that, before they got snubbed, too. It was too bad. I wish the grandmother from this movie has an unbelievable performance that I thought might get nominated for Best Supporting Actress. That didn't happen. It's a movie about a Chinese-American who visits her grandmother while her grandmother is dying, but her family does not tell her that she's dying, and dealing with that, like trying to keep her, happy and around. Apparently, it's a fairly common tactic in Chinese families to kind of like don't let the it's not the cancer that kills you. It's knowing
you're going to die.
It's knowing you're going to die. And it just was an incredible movie because I'm really into like tone. Like in general, like it had a very difficult tone to nail where it was like very sweet and nostalgic and thoughtful and kind of intelligent about like the immigrant experience. But it was very funny. It was super light, like easy movie to watch. Like it all went down in a very like fun, enjoyable way. It's one of my favorite movies I think I saw last year.
Yeah, and it's not a farce. Like I expected a farce of like she's trying to tell the grandma they're finding ways to keep her away, but like it's not that at all. It's very real. Everyone gives a great performance. I think all the awards they've gotten have been deserved. I wish I got more.
Yeah.
I love the movie, and that movie made me cry. Mr. Rogers' Note, The Farewell.
Yeah, there is
There
is sort of a moment towards the end, which I'm guessing is probably when you did it. I mean, it's so real and it's so smart. And it's also one of those movies, kind of like Little Women, which I mentioned last week, where just the presence,
Little Women LA.
What is that?
It's a show about little people in LA, Little Women LA.
Thanks for jumping in here. Erica was like writing something and then her head just popped up and she had to scream out Little Women LA and then explain to us what the reference meant. Is that like a show on TV now?
Yeah.
Or is it an old one?
No, it's like current.
It's like the existence of the movie itself is like a huge victory and adds like another layer of meaning to me to the whole movie. Like the fact that Little Women still exists now 130 years later is kind of like a big part of that, like the power of that
movie.
Why
are we talking about Little
Women? No. Here we go. The Farewell, I'm saying, like the fact that this story, which is a true story, sort of ends, you know, without them saying it, with her making this movie, makes it even more badass, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic, and it kind of taught you a lot about Chinese culture and about accepting your own culture. I loved the movie, and it was not what I expected at all. And fuck Little Women. Little Women LA.
Little Women was amazing. Greta Gerwig
robbed. Stop it. That was last week. I don't want to hear any more about Little Women. But I do believe she was robbed. Erica, what do you got for us?
Well, I'm going to...
I think Little Women LA was her recommendation.
It is.
I thought you were talking about Little Women again.
No, real quick, just a YouTube sort of miniseries that Megyn Kelly put up herself, and it's called
Megyn Kelly.
She is who Bombshell was based after, the reporter with the Roger Ailes.
This is a Fox News recommendation, okay?
It's the opposite, actually, because the movie is all about the Roger Ailes scandals and the women that actually stood up to her, and so she sort of had a problem with her depiction in the film. Obviously she's trying to protect herself from work and everything, but they go through, it's just a 30 minute YouTube thing on her page, and it goes through the sexual harassment scandal at Fox and sort of the women that were involved with it, and also how the actresses portray it was just, it's a really kind of upsettingly moving piece that I think, especially if you're interested in seeing the movie Bombshell, which is awesome, then it kind of pulls a different, you know, sides of pieces together.
Is she telling her story, or is she like refuting the movie piece by piece?
It's almost, she starts off by refuting it because she's like, this isn't, like, I didn't have any stake in this wasn't what happened, and then it ended up sort of turning into this round table of women that were actually sexually abused in this Fox News scandal, and sort of her side of what she went through, like her husband who's depicted in the movie is actually in the, it's really sort of, I don't know. It's really powerful, I guess.
And what's it called?
It's Megyn Kelly Presents a Response to Bombshell. And it's a full... Yeah, a response to Bombshell.
And it's just one episode. It's just one video,
like
half an hour
minutes,
long.
Yeah.
And is it, you have to have like YouTube Red, or is it just anyone can
go?
Nope,
just anyone.
Google it
just,
up.
Yeah.
Cool. That sounds interesting. I've got a great one this week. I'm very excited about this. And it might be frustrating for the listeners, but sometimes people send me things. You know, if you wanted to send something to me, if a fan wanted to send something to me, they wouldn't be able to. You can't find my address anywhere. But you can send things to my manager, and my manager will get them to me if it is worth my time. And she'll make that – she doesn't tell me about everything that I get, but when something's good, she sends it along, and it rarely happens. Like, I get a lot of stuff. It never gets to me. This one did. Someone – I'm going to give a shout-out to Marjorie. She works in publishing and listens to the podcast, a big fan, loves our recommendations, and said, I think that you, she's like, sent to my manager, handwritten note, beautiful handwriting, Marjorie, and said, I just thought that Anthony would like this book. It's called The Glass Hotel, and I believe I'm pronouncing the name right, Emily St. John Mandel, who wrote, like 11, the 11th.
Station
11. Yeah, she wrote Station 11, which I read a couple years ago. I may have recommended it on this podcast or on RJVP, but it was an amazing book. I think it was shortlisted for the Booker Prize. And this book, I think, honestly, like the beginning of it, it's a pre-release copy. And the beginning is a letter from the editor being like, people didn't want to read this because they thought Station 11 was so great that they didn't want to be like let down by the follow-up. Mm. I think this is even better. I think that that note is unwarranted. It's a wonderful book. Marjorie described it as ominous and suspenseful. And she says, plus it has a touch of heartbreaking sadness, which is the understatement of fucking 2020 so far. It's a beautiful book. I didn't want to tell anybody what it's about. It's about mistakes. It's about regret. It's about ghosts. And the characters are amazing. I tore through it in 36 hours and truly loved it. It comes out March 24th. Visit your local bookstore and order yourself a copy of The Glass Hotel.
March 24th.
Yes.
That's so long.
The Glass Hotel by Emily St. John Mandel. But that's why you want to get it into people's hands so they can promote it. But this is the book. I think this is going to be a big book. And I urge everyone to read it. I'll remind you come March.
Do you have it? Can I borrow it?
Yeah. I'll bring it in next week. But I keep thinking about it. It's one of those books like I read a lot. I'll finish a book and pick up a new one. I wanted to like sit with this. I wanted to like not read for a few days and just think about this book.
I'm sold.
That's how good it is. Did you read Station 11?
I love me a sad book.
Oh, it's fucking sad as hell and in the best way.
I haven't read it. I gave it to my dad, I remember, for Christmas or his birthday, and he loved it. It's one of the rare books that I've given that people actually like.
Station 11's great, but it's like about, like, it's almost a thriller. It's about, like, there's like an apocalyptic flu that there's only a few survivors, and it's fascinating that way. This is not that. It takes place in reality. Kind of a Bernie Madoff situation is involved. But I just fucking loved it. And
I just don't like it when you recommend books that I actually want to read, because then if I read them, it's like there's one more book I can't recommend.
Welcome to my life. Do you know how many books I've read based on your recommendation and then not been able to say anything?
I've been refusing to read yours, although there's a bunch of them. But watch out. The NFL regular season is over, and now I'm coming for you, and the good book recommendations are coming.
Well, I'll bring it in for Erica next week, and then when she's done with it in 3 months, you may just want to pre-order a copy at your local bookstore, Greg. And that is my my recommendation, The Glass Hotel by Emily St. John Mandel. And thank you to Marjorie for giving me something that I actually want. You don't understand how rare that is. And now, Ellis, get us out of here.
Whoa, Nelly Furtado, that's a spicy meatball.
Thank you, Ellis.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.